From London, BBC Caribbean Report.
The killing of a wanted criminal in Guyana becomes a political issue. The head of the WTO has admitted that it does not operate in the interest of small states, and the opposition leader in Nevis is unimpressed with plans to write him out of the political equation. I'm Orin Gordon, and this is BBC Caribbean Report. Dozens of fully armed riot police were deployed in sections of the Guyanese capital, Georgetown, today as the funeral of one of the country's most wanted criminals, Lyndon London, turned into a full-fledged political affair. The police were trying to prevent the funeral procession from passing through certain streets of the capital to maintain order. Earlier, thousands gathered at one of Guyana's national monuments and filed past his coffin, which was draped in the national flag. Many in the crowd appeared to have adopted London as a hero. He was wanted for several armed robberies in the capital, which left two people dead, and was himself shot dead last week after a gun battle with the police. Now the opposition leader Desmond Hoyt has entered the fray, describing his death as murder. Colin Smith reports.
Permission was not granted for the funeral of London to take place from one of the country's public squares in the capital. In spite of this, an estimated 12,000 persons, many of them in office uniforms, this morning defied the authorities and filled the national monument called the Square of the Revolution, where the funeral was held. The massive turnout by members of the public was no doubt also prompted by growing public concern over an increasing number of what are claimed to be virtual police executions, of which London was said to be a victim. This feeling was also expressed by opposition leader Mr. Desmond Hoyt, who was among this morning's mourners.
The question was the man in which he was killed. And the man in which he was killed amongst the murder. And nothing can wash that away. And we're living in a society in which certain elements in the police force seem to have constituted themselves accusers, judge, jury, and executioners. They've been killing people with impunity. And we have been raising our voices against this extrajudicial killing.
Police Commissioner Laurie Lewis said this morning that he did not know if the dead man had surrendered before he was shot. He added, however, that during a recent robbery, the late Lyndon London endangered the lives of many people, and this was something the police could not allow.
Criminals cannot be permitted to do as they please in this country. And I'm calling on all law-abiding citizens to come out and make it very clear that criminals cannot be permitted to carry on like this. We have a national responsibility to ensure that law and order are maintained. And we would be failing in this responsibility if we didn't ensure that we stuck to it.
The incident has also sparked off a heated debate between the country's political parties, who have issued several statements over the past few days. A 10-year hunt for London, which extended to several Caribbean countries, ended just over a week ago when police and army units surrounded the house in which the wanted man was hiding. After a spectacular 11-hour gun battle between him and the security forces, the house was set alight and the wanted man was shot dead in controversial circumstances as he emerged from the building. A woman who was in the house with London was also killed, while a soldier and two policemen were shot and injured in that shootout. Colin Smith in Georgetown, Guyana for BBC Caribbean Report.
At the Bangkok meeting of the United Nations Conference on Trade and Developments, delegates have again been talking about how to make globalization, unrestricted free trade, work in favor of developing countries. Caribbean and other countries have stressed the point that the rich countries don't take their circumstances into account. The head of the World Trade Organization, Mike Moore, agrees with them.
We must make the system work fairer and better. We all need a rules-based trading system that will work for all our members, large and small, rich and poor. It must do so, and it can, and it will. History demands it.
Mr. Moore told the conference that the stakes are very high. The potential benefits, he says, are huge, and the cost of failure, severe.
We all know that the prosperity, peace, and progress of all peoples is based on a common need. We cooperate or we perish. The multilateral trading system is one of the foundations of peace and of progress.
Well, listening to Mike Moore has been the BBC's economics correspondent, Andrew Walker.
I've heard one or two representatives from independent development groups saying that they detect no change whatever in the position of the rich countries on some of the key issues that made the World Trade Organization meeting back in Seattle last year collapse. I suppose there is progress, is that because this is not a forum in which you expect hard-headed trade commitments to be made, it does mean people that the government's concerned can perhaps relax a little bit more and talk less formally and try and understand one another's positions better, perhaps contributing to a better atmosphere that may be conducive to getting that failed trade negotiating process back on the road.
But developing countries are on their own ground, if you like. This conference is all about addressing their concerns. Are they happier than they were in Seattle that that is what is happening, their concerns are being addressed?
I think everybody seems to me to be happier than they were in Seattle. There was clearly a great deal of animosity and tension there. Here, for the most part, I think the governments at least are reasonably happy with the process. They do undoubtedly feel that UNCTAD is a more inclusive organisation. They're certainly pleased to hear Mike Moore saying that he wants the WTO to be more inclusive. For all of them, I think that UNCTAD is a forum in which they can express their views very freely. The drawback for them, I suppose, is that they can't do very much more than that. It has to be said, ultimately a talking shop, not something that's going to produce hard agreements.
Andrew, what's been the overall reaction of developing countries to Mike Moore's speech?
They certainly liked the general sentiment of what he had to say. Certainly the government ministers and officials that I spoke to from the developing world were very favourably impressed, but they basically want to see what that means in practice. Now, some of the people from independent agencies within the developing countries were a good deal more sceptical. Again, some of them did say, yes, those were the right noises, but they say that the WTO is still too much in thrall to the rich countries. The way one person from Senegal put it to me was, Mr. Moore has a monkey on his shoulder, the monkey concerned being, in this person's views, the governments of the United States and the rest of the developed world, and he needs to get it off.
Andrew Walker in Bangkok. Tomorrow, the thorny issue of trade in bananas will be discussed at a meeting between Europe's Trade Commission and the U.S. Trade Representative. It's the first time for this year that the topic, which led to a trade war last year, will be discussed at this level. Debbie Ransom reports.
European Trade Commissioner Pascal Lamy will be looking to discuss the prospect of a new trade round when he visits Washington on Thursday and Friday and meets with his American counterpart, Charlene Barshefsky. The meeting's not meant to solve any of the trade risks between two of the WTO's biggest trading blocs. His spokesman in Brussels described the meeting as a confidence-building exercise. Bananas are up for discussion, including the proposal from Caribbean countries to allow the continuation of the special European banana import preferences without ruling out a move towards free trade in bananas in line with the WTO directive. Mr. Lamy's spokesman said they're hoping for a suitable and satisfactory resolution of difficulties over the regime. The United States' challenge at the WTO over Europe's banana preferences led to three WTO rulings against the trade regime. When Europe then asked for more time to revamp the regime, a trade war ensued, with American trade sanctions being imposed on select European products. But bananas will not be alone on the menu when the two trade representatives meet. Europe's executive commissioner this week voiced concerns about new American tariffs to protect its home steel industry. This means that steel, too, could join the list of bananas, hormone-treated beef, and aircraft noise guidelines as a reason for transatlantic trade disputes.
Debbie Ransom reporting. You're listening to BBC Caribbean Report. The opposition leader in Nevis, Joseph Parry, has told BBC Caribbean Report that he favours constitutional reform rather than secession from the Federation with St. Kitts, and he's pouring scorn on plans by the Premier Van Samery to take him out of the political equation at the next election. Mr. Parry refused to back the island's secession from Federation with St. Kitts 2 years ago when a referendum on the issue was held. Pro-secessionists just failed to get a two-thirds majority. Now Mr. Amery is taking a different route towards that. by first wresting Mr. Parry's seat from him at the March 6th elections, so gaining control of all three Neva seats in the Federation's Assembly. This is how he justified the strategy to BBC Caribbean Report.
That we don't have other persons who have other agenda talking at cross purposes, because that is what has happened over the past.
Ken Richards has been looking at the statements from the other players.
Prime Minister Denzel Douglas doesn't see the question of secession figuring this time around on the election campaign trail and has said as much. It's a position the Nevis Reformation Party can identify with, as NRP leader Joseph Parry told Caribbean Report.
The federal elections have absolutely nothing to do with secession. Right now, the Nevis Reformation Party is saying that we need to try constitutional reform. Constitutional reform can be done at federal level with all the political parties taking part.
Premier Vance Imrie hasn't forgotten that Mr. Parry's party failed to support his secession thrust when a referendum was held on the issue 2 years ago. Mr. Imrie is looking towards the March 6 federal elections to win all three of the Nevis seats. This will allow him, he believes, greater leverage in the fight for secession.
All I'm saying is let the people give the party which has stood by them and which has shown an interest in their affairs, give us the full mandate to deal with the issues with the elected representatives in St. Kitts. That's all we are saying.
But Joseph Parry counters that if this means Mr. Imrie's concerned citizens' movement controlling all three of the Nevis federal seats, Premier Imrie had better prepare for a tough battle.
We are satisfied that we will take at least two of the three seats. We have two very good candidates, and we are going to announce our third candidate shortly, who will be contesting against Premier Imrie. Premier Imrie himself is vulnerable.
That's fighting talk yet to be tested at the polls, as is the matter of just how significant the issue of secession will prove to be as the election rhetoric intensifies.
That report was by Ken Richards. The timetable for parliamentary elections in Haiti is again in doubt. It's just over a month to the poll, which is considered vital in sorting out the country's muddled political process and freeing up international aid. The process has been blighted by problems with voter registration, and there are long-held fears that the March date could slip, and slip significantly. Now, press reports are quoting a Washington-based elections monitoring group, the International Foundation for Electoral Systems, as saying that elections may be better off postponed. When I telephoned the IFES program officer Karen Seeger in Washington, she insisted that March 19th was still possible.
We are still working towards having the elections on March 19th. We have not advised the CEP at all about changing the date. We think that technically it can still be achieved. So we are not advising or even recommending or suggesting that the date be changed.
We're talking about elections a month away from now, and with something like 4 million registered voters in a country with very poor communications facilities and very limited facilities overall. Can it be done?
Technically, it can be done. There are a couple of factors that are outside of the Election Commission's direct control, and those two factors are the printing of the ballots, because there are thousands of offices being run, and so the printing companies that are printing the ballots have to be able to get the ballots out on time for them to be distributed across the country. The printers are saying that, yes, they can do that on time, but that still remains to be seen. And the second factor is getting the lists of potential poll workers from the political parties and training those poll workers. It's going to be about 45,000 to 50,000 poll workers that need to be identified and trained. We do have plans to do that, but the factor that we can't really control is when the political parties submit the lists and whether the lists include people who are qualified to work in the polls.
You're saying you're working...
They have to be able to read and write.
You're saying you're working towards the elections taking place as scheduled on the 19th of March. But is that the same thing as being absolutely confident, given the circumstances, that it can take place on that date?
Well, as I said, there are a number of factors that are beyond the control of the election authorities. They have to depend on outside sources, such as the political parties and such as the private printing companies, to do their job. And if those partners in this electoral process can come through in a timely and appropriate manner, then yes, the elections can be held.
The CARICOM Secretariat, or the Caribbean community, is also observing the elections in Haiti. Are you working with them?
We advise the observer groups on a regular basis. We are in touch with the OAS as well. We are prepared to provide any information on the technical process of the elections for the observers so that they can know what they're looking at and know what to keep an eye out for.
Karen Seeger of IFES, ending BBC Caribbean Report. Join us at 11:05, 11:15 and 12:10 GMT for our morning programs. This is Oren Gordon saying goodbye from London.